Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. A big role in every election is how candidates harness the media, which news outlets they talk to, the message that they're trying to convey, demographics they're looking to target. One of the biggest storylines for this primary was Tom Steyer's campaign, reportedly spending close to $200 million in ads for broadcast TV, which was the most expensive political advertising campaign in the country this year. But that's just one of the roles that traditional media like TV, radio, newspapers play in this election. The Pew Research Center says that over half of Americans report getting at least some of their news from social media, 21% saying they often look to social media as part of their news diet. More and more campaigns are looking to utilize new media to reach voters. So here to talk us through that and some other interesting trends that she's noticed this election cycle is Mindy Romero, founder and director of the Center for Inclusive Democracy. Welcome back to Insight.
Thanks for having me again.
So I want to start with looking at what we call traditional media. Tom Steyer is currently sitting in third place, may or may not move on to the general election. What did you make of such a large ad buy from his campaign?
Well, I think, first of all, it just says something about the state of our democracy, right? That you can have somebody come in, whether you like his policies or like him as a candidate. There was an anticipation, at least on the part of his campaign, that by spending a lot of money, right, otherwise he wouldn't do it, spending a lot of money, that he could gather a lot of attention and interest, right, and sell his message. And if he doesn't make it to the top two, then of course the story is going to be written that that was a mistake, right, a strategic misinvestment, if you will. If he makes it, then, you know, obviously it depends on what happens in the general. But, you know, we've seen other big candidates in the state in the past, Meg Whitman being one of them against Brown, that spent a lot of money and it didn't get them the governorship. So I think I'll leave it there.
Yeah. I'm also curious. There were a lot of debates for the governor's race, especially in the final weeks heading to the primary. Do you think people still watch debates in their entirety? I mean, do they matter as much as they once did for winning over voters? Or are people really going to scroll on Instagram or Facebook or what have you, and they're kind of seeing the highlights of a debate? Maybe.
Yeah, I think for most people, it's the latter. And it's definitely a maybe, especially when we're talking about the primary. Debates are important. We have to have that kind of statement of record, that opportunity, right, to engage with candidates in a deeper way, have to have them be challenged and compared. But nowadays, it's about the soundbite, and that's what we actually see played out, right, in terms of how a debate will be run and how candidates are prepping for them. It's the soundbite. It's the afterlife that comes from what happens in the debate.
Another bridge between traditional media and new media technology is the rise of artificial intelligence, AI-generated ads. We actually saw this play out in the race for mayor of Los Angeles.
Yes, we did.
Reality TV candidate Spencer Pratt used AI. What do you think about this? I mean, there's a lot of concerns, of course, but is there anything beneficial to this use?
Oh, that's a good question. There's definitely a lot of concerns. I think for Pratt, it was probably a key factor in why he's doing so well. I mean, certainly all the other things that the previous interviewees mentioned in terms of frustration, right, in the LA area. But if he didn't have those AI-generated videos and, you know, him, you know, Spencer Pratt becoming Batman, right, for instance, I don't think he would have gotten as much attention, and attention that really took him across the country, right? Attention, support, donations, all of that. And I think he took him to a totally different level than probably anybody expected initially. So it was beneficial for him. In terms of the rest of, you know, the electorate, I think you really have to look at it a couple of different ways. One is, if there's disinformation or misinformation happening within that AI and people can't tell, right, that it's not the person saying it or not what they said, that's really problematic. And we have still a long way to go in terms of regulating all of that so the public does know. And of course, technology is outpacing all of it. And really, we're already to the point that you can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
And then if it's AI generated for good, in the sense, of course, who ultimately decides what is good, but if it's making an election official's job easier, for instance, to produce content that is going to educate voters, right, correctly about the ballot, right, and ballot deadlines or whatever the issue might be, it can be very efficient and it can be used to help disseminate information in creative ways or in different ways, right? Where maybe you couldn't afford a large campaign if you were an election official, for instance, or an advocacy group. So I think there's kind of a couple of different ways to look at it, but certainly a lot of concern around the disclosure part of it and the misinformation, disinformation aspect.
Given that social media is just a big part of people's lives, the majority of people's lives, you know, as we head to the November election, I mean, AI-generated ads, campaigns, relying on social media influencers, maybe even bots as well. I mean, what do you want people to keep in mind? Because this is going to be on their feeds, and it's probably going to just increase in the months leading to November.
Yeah, and of course, we've seen it in the gubernatorial race alone here in California. Steyer, at least, you know, just recently, it being discovered that he was paying a lot of influencers, a number of influencers from his campaign, and they weren't disclosing, at least not most of them fully, that they were being paid. So it looked like it was, you know, a genuine endorsement, right, or an organic endorsement. So I think the use of influencers, first and foremost, has to be properly disclosed. And there are the legal requirements to the FPPC. People, campaigns do have to disclose what they're doing, but it's not always clear from reading those disclosures where the money is going, you know, if it's going through a media outlet, for instance, and then eventually going to an influencer. And then what are the, you know, what's the willingness to be transparent, right, on the part of the influencer? Nowadays, people are so disconnected from the political process that something that is genuine and real and organic, and they think it's from another person that they already admire and consider trusted, can actually have a heavy weight. So this is a really important topic, and one that I think is just going to multiply going forward.
In the last minute that we have, I mean, we're now looking like straight ahead to the general. What's on your radar?
Well, everybody's wondering, of course, what the top two is going to be for the gubernatorial race, Becerra, Hilton, or Steyer. I'm thinking about all the noise that we're going to be expecting in November, and how so much of the California kind of campaign landscape is probably going to get drowned out. There'll be a lot of attention on the gubernatorial race, but other statewide races, local races, in this new era that we're in, get really drowned out by the national landscape, the battle for control of Congress, and also all of the already things that we've seen and things that we're expecting from the federal government, the Trump administration, when it comes to executive orders. There's a Supreme Court decision right looming.
Right.
There's a lot of concern around election interference, whether that's real or otherwise. The perception of it can impact how people feel about the election, but of course, the conversation that is happening, and all of that is all real and very important to track, but it does make it harder for people just to get information on their local races, especially when local media is so fractured these days and often struggling, right? Of course, your station and your program does an amazing job with viewers and informing them, but it's difficult in this environment for people to kind of cut through the national noise.
Yeah, a lot of national noise. I mean, life is just so busy. There's a lot of pressures and stresses. And then, yeah, making an informed decision as a voter, even registering to vote, can be so difficult. Mindy, as always, thank you so much for joining us. I am sure we'll be having you back as we get closer to November.
Thanks for having me.
Mindy Romero is the founder and director of the Center for Inclusive Democracy. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple or Spotify. And if you want to email us, we're at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producers Andrew Garcia, Sarit Lashinsky, and editor Jen Picard. Insight's technical director and audio engineer is Mark Jones, and our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.